making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the B-side of 137 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. A little bit early, Friday morning, August 28th, 2009. This transmission originates from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, where week in, week out, I give you all the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups that your little heart can handle. We've got so much coming up on episode 138 that we're going to squeeze in a quickie. 137B, where we're going to set the table with a little more from talking head known as Chris Matthews. Apparently, he has his own little classy sit-down Sunday style talk show, not just his regular hardball. But by way of Think Progress, which I'm no big, huge fan of, but they still do good work sometimes, Chris Matthews says bloggers don't fact-check. During a discussion on the future of newspapers and journalism on the Chris Matthews Show, Times' Joe Klein said that on complicated stories, you can do this stuff on the internet. Matthews responded by asking, who's going to fact check?
Newspapers are essential to understanding complicated stories like healthcare, like the economy especially. You got to sit down and read it for 10, 20 minutes to get your head around it. And people like that are not going to be hired by television. They're just not going to be out there. Foreign correspondents, you just got back. You were out there. You've spent a good part of this year overseas. Who's going to pay Joe Klein to go to Iran and places like that?
Well, one of the reasons why I'm going to Iran and places like that is because Time Magazine and other publications like ours are closing bureaus all over the world. I'm, you know, thrilled to be able to go there, but, I mean, there has been a diminution. But the other thing I would say is this. On complicated stories, you can do this stuff on the internet. In fact, you got more space to do it on the internet.
Who's going to fact check for you?
We fact check our editors. There are
online,
still editors. There are still
check.
Now it depends
the
on the website.
Bloggers don't fact check.
Nobody fact checks. We still the print magazine, the Time magazine, still has elaborate fact checking. But Time.com,
no. Internet now to fact check. I mean, you know, in a way, when you know, one of the things that amuses me now when I think about it is just, you know, we have online to fact check. There is no information that you can't find out online. So the fact is, this idea that fact checking has to be disassociated from the report.
I'll tell you, when you write the major magazines like Vanity Fair, every story, line by line, you got people checking out the truth or falseness of statements made.
Yes, but they're checking it out very often online.
But you know who does the fact checking? It's really interesting. Our readers. My commenters will say, well, you said Paul Wolfowitz said that, but on September 8th, 1997, he said this.
But there's
it's there.
There's a difference between fact-checking, though, and checking the quality of the journalism.
Right, well,
those are two different things.
And
the quality of the journalism.
Check your sources. A good editor will say who your sources are.
Right.
It's ironic that a cable news host such as Chris Matthews would attack bloggers for supposedly not checking their facts, considering the amount of falsehoods and factually inaccurate statements he regularly utters on the air, which have all been fact-checked by bloggers. That last sentence, considering the amount of falsehoods and factually inaccurate statements he regularly utters on the air. We do fact check. And here are a few good examples. First up, in the alternative news rundown that I've got for you, the return of James Corbett and the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com, episode 95 the biometric control grid, where he asks, have you had your fingerprints taken for government ID, your irises scanned, your earlobes measured, a microchip implanted? Are you prepared to? Where will you draw the line? Episode 95 delves into the depths of the biometric control grid. And something that James Corbett does, when you go to the episode page, the stories are documented, even with time code, where they happen in the show and where they come from. Next up, cranking them out, because, of course, time is of the essence, a sort of sequel to the Obama deception. New documentary called Fall of the Republic exposes how Brand Obama is helping to destroy the country. This write-up from Paul Joseph Watson. Alex Jones's highly anticipated upcoming documentary, Fall of the Republic, The Presidency of Barack Obama, boldly lifts the lid and unveils the fraud behind Brand Obama and how the globalists are using their newest and slickest ever puppet to destroy the last vestiges of America's freedom, constitution, economy, all while helping the banksters loot the country clean. The film exposes the agenda that Obama was put in place to accomplish, a world government allied with a bank of the world run by globalist eugenicists hell-bent on destroying America's first world status and replacing it with a hollow shell of tyranny. The mind control, the TV programming, and all the media talking points that serve to reinforce the image of Brand Obama are laid bare, unveiling the naked truth, as legendary author and documentary filmmaker John Pilger recently discussed, that Obama is nothing more than a corporate marketing creation. We hit that last week. A skilled hypnotist is using seductive tools of propaganda, race, gender, class, so on, to hoodwink the masses into accepting his rhetoric while ignoring the contradiction of his actions. The film exposes how Brand Obama says one thing to make people buy into the brand, and then the real Obama does another. The movie's going to have Gerald Celente, Alan Watt, Jesse Ventura, climatologist Tim Ball, economist John Perkins, the Oath Keepers, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Webster Tarpley, Bob Bowman, Wayne Mattson, George Humphrey, and on and on. There is a trailer. The movie, I believe, ships in October. But let's check out the trailer for Fall of the Republic.
Last week, the head of the country's central bank floated the idea of dumping the greenback as the world's reserve currency, replacing it with an international currency.
Thousands of people gathered to hear Barack Obama deliver a key foreign policy speech on his current European tour. His vision for America's place in a new world order.
Returning vets could be a risk to our nation.
We've got to give them a stake in creating the kind of world order that I think all of us would like to see.
And one of the ways it will drive the change is through global governance.
I think the new world order is emerging.
This is a hoax and a scam which is designed to transfer wealth and power from the private sector to the government sector and from the government of the United States to a world government.
And those people who have been yelling, oh, the UN's going to take over global
conspiracy
government.
Conspiracy theorists.
They've been crazy, but now they're right.
And who got the money?
Hundreds and hundreds of banks, any bank or that has access to the U.S. Federal Reserve's discount.
Tell us who they are.
No.
You know, financial terrorism. They have the ability to tweak the knob.
I am proposing that the Federal Reserve be granted new authority.
The ultimate goal of the carbon tax and the cap and trade is to destroy production.
This energy tax is the largest tax increase in American history.
We're actually creating a global warming police. So number one, they can come in, the federal government can come in and inspect your house and send you the bill. We're setting up a global warming Gestapo.
One of the things that you talk to our generals, they are desperate for, is a civilian counterpart to our military forces.
I am fierce.
And this is what I wear.
Senator Barack Obama's presidential campaign is asking Missouri law enforcement to target anyone who lies or runs a misleading television ad.
I've now been in 57 states. I think one left to go.
The president, when he was in Europe last week, he met with the king of Saudi Arabia. He appeared to bomb.
President Obama today proposed something new, something called prolonged detention. Pre-crime is when people are arrested and incarcerated to prevent crimes that they have not yet committed.
There it is, Fall of the Republic, another salvo in the info war, but that's not all. There's another one coming soon from one of the guys behind Loose Change, Jason Burmis. He also put out a documentary last year called Fabled Enemies. He's got a new one coming out called Invisible Empire. A new world order defined sets out to do just that, define the term New World Order. And of course, you can check out the Wikipedia conspiracy theories of New World Order. And it sheds light on the power elite, their agenda, and their modes of operation. Filmmaker Jason Burmis, who's best known for his work on The Loose Change and more recently Fabled Enemies, has decided to go beyond 9/11 and take the next logical step. Burmis takes a look at the history of power, hungry mad men who seem to stop at nothing to shape the world in their vision, the scandals that surround them, the havoc they have wreaked on the general populace, and what they have planned for the future of humanity. Another no-holds-barred look into the real power structure that the mainstream media refuses to discuss and is itself a part of the invisible empire.
Nazi forces seek to establish systems of government based on the regimentation of all human beings by a handful of individual rulers who seize power by force.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society.
And the hope that each of us has to build a new world order.
A new world order is coming into being, but it looks less and less like the world order that Mr. Kissinger had constructed in his own mind.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically, opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
What is the Bohemian Grove? Well, it's a kind of summer camp for the powerful.
Among its members, political figures like Gerald Ford, President Reagan, Vice President Bush, Richard Nixon is a Bohemian. Each year, guests like Henry Kissinger or Zbigniew Brzezinski address members on their areas of expertise.
Be a poster child for these people because you have served on the board of the Council on Foreign Relations, you started, helped start the Trilateral Commission, and you've been to the Bilderberger groups.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy.
I don't believe in this notion of some sort of secret societies controlling people. But, of course, in any political system, there are sort of over-the-table and under-the-table arrangements.
It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine
by the military-industrial complex.
Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised.
We can find meaning and reward by serving some higher purpose than ourselves. A shining purpose, the illumination of 1,000 points of light.
No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
The quest for the new world order is in part a challenge to keep the dangers of disorder at bay.
We were interested today to hear that more than 100 law enforcement officials in Mexico are having microchips implanted in their arms. The chips allow a person to be scanned, sort of like a cereal box at the supermarket checkout.
I think the most important thing is for Barack Obama.
I think his task would be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period when really a new world order can be created.
I think a new world order is emerging, and with it the foundations of a new and progressive era of international cooperation.
But the burdens of global citizenship continue to bind us together. In this new century, Americans and Europeans alike will be required to do more, not less. Partnership and cooperation among nations is not a choice.
Yes, these men and their hypnotized followers call this a new order. It is not new. And it is not order.
I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people.
It's not new and it's not order. That's the trailer for Jason Burmes' forthcoming documentary, Invisible Empire, A New World Order Defined. And it was, of course, interspersed with clips from JFK's landmark legendary speech, I believe, to the newspapers union. And we can kind of take that call for ourselves as we're basically, we set the table at the top of the show with Matthews attacking essentially the alternative media, saying, you got to have newspapers to understand all this, propping up the dinosaur. So we hit Corbett Report, Fall of the Republic, and the Invisible Empire. All big, brave blasts in the information war. So I've tried to launch more and more blasts myself. I've been working slowly but surely on cyberspacewar.com. It's up, it's running, it's slowly coming together as I tweak it and keep going, but we've got citizen soldiers, social networks, and criminal skills. We're going to first hit a piece from DODBuzz.com, and DODBuzz originally called this piece Citizen Soldiers Wage Cyber War. And I got a link to the cache of that original page, but then later they changed it to perhaps something a little more specific to Rusky Civvies Waging Cyber War. So, Citizen Soldiers Wage Cyber War to Rusky Civvies Waging Cyber War. So, they're doing it there. It, of course, relates to, well, let's just read it. A new report by the U.S. Cyber Consequences Unit, USCCU, finds that citizens quickly became cyber warriors when the Russians started attacking Georgia, which, that's a whole other story right there. We know that Georgia did it first. Proxy state, proxy war. But the folks at aviationweek.com have a piece that includes an interview with one of the report's authors who says that the attacks, quote, were carried out by civilians with little or no direct involvement by the Russian government or military, the researchers found. Most of those launching the attacks were Russians, but sympathizers from the Ukraine and Latvia also participated, end quote. The other notable fact in this report, social networking sites such as Twitter and Facebook were important tools in the struggle. We can hit theregister.com for more on this. Georgian cyber attacks launched by Russian crime gangs. Last year's cyber attacks that brought internet traffic to a standstill in the Republic of Georgia were carried out by civilians and Russian crime gangs, in some cases with the unwitting help of websites and software companies located in the U.S., according to researchers in a report that we just mentioned from the U.S. Cyber Consequences Unit. Using, of course, botnets and more and more. Citizen soldiers waging cyber war. We're being prepped for it. The rest is just a short list of headlines on cyberspacewar.com. Federal Computer Week asking, do we need a United Nations Cybersecurity Council? And of course we don't, but that won't stop us from probably getting one. Google may erase images of Switzerland. A Swiss government official demanded that Google Incorporated immediately take off the internet any Street View images of Switzerland, and the company said Monday it would work to resolve problems with the privacy rights regulator. Hans-Peter Thür, Switzerland's Federal Data Protection Commissioner, said Google's pictures violate Switzerland's strict privacy laws by failing to obscure people's identities on the mapping service, which of course offers detailed street-level images. More, of course, on social networking. They leak personal data to trackers. This from techradar.com. And I suppose it would be more appropriate, I believe, that they sell it. They don't leak it. A new study has found that social networking sites, including Facebook, MySpace, and Dig, are making personal information available to companies that track web users' habits and allows them to link anonymous browsing habits to specific people. This report by researchers at Worcester Polytechnic Institute is the first to show how tracking sites could directly link browsing habits to specific individuals using information leaked in HTTP headers, refer headers, cookies, and applications. When you sign up with a social networking site, you're assigned a unique identifier, says Craig Wills, professor of computer science at WPI. This is a string of numbers or characters that points to your profile. We found that when social networking sites pass information to tracking sites about your activities, they often include this unique identifier. JonesReport.com website blocked under a filter for containing supposedly criminal skills content. InfoWars and JonesReport.com got the tip from somebody at the Oregon County Library in Thayer, Missouri, that they've now classified JonesReport.com as promoting criminal skills. And there's a nice little screenshot for you. McKinnon anti-extradition protest. That's from the BBC, and that's, of course, about Gary McKinnon. More on that from Threat Level. ACLU calls Pentagon hackers' extradition tragic. The American Civil Liberties Union came to the defense of British hacker Gary McKinnon on Thursday, decrying an extradition treaty that could soon see McKinnon standing trial in the U.S. on charges of cracking and damaging American military systems. Saying, quote, the recent tragic case of Gary McKinnon highlights the need to ensure that an individual's case is properly judicially reviewed and the courts have the power to bar extradition if the interest of the justice require it, wrote ACLU Executive Director Anthony Romero in a letter to British Foreign Secretary David Miliband. There's a PDF of that letter. Last month, and we covered this, Britain's High Court rejected two extradition appeals by McKinnon, who is now awaiting word on whether he'll be permitted further appeal. McKinnon, 43 years old, is accused of breaching unclassified U.S. government systems and allegedly crashing some of them, in one case deleting critical files and causing the shutdown of the Army's Military District of Washington network of over 2,000 computers for 24 hours. Federal prosecutors claim McKinnon's intrusions, which took place from February 2001 to March 2002, caused over $700,000 in damage. U.S. foreign policy is akin to government-sponsored terrorism these days, McKinnon wrote on a hacked Army computer in 2002. It was not a mistake that there was a huge security stand-down on September 11th last year. Hacker 9/11 truther. Now, I believe the other bit is that he essentially was trying to look for covered-up info about unidentified flying objects, ufology, and aliens. So while looking for that, he of course found all kinds of crazy stuff that does and doesn't relate to ufology. Space Navy, all kinds of ridiculous things. Again, the Gary McKinnon case is quite fascinating, and perhaps we'll get more into that as time goes on. Facebook meets RFID in a marketer's dream. This from TimeKnots.com. Technologists and marketers are getting excited at the process, at the prospect, rather, of tying individuals to retail items through social networking and RFID tags. So there's a link to readwriteweb.com for something called Web Squared when Web 2.0 meets Internet of Things. This tech blogger says, quote, applying collective intelligence to sensor data will be a rich vein of opportunity in the coming years. The opportunities he's talking about, we suspect, are for corporations and governments. Here's the poll. Let's face it, a smart RFID chip on a bottle of wine, one that knows its production and travel history, its temperature, its price relative to similar bottles of wine, etc., will be human hacking anytime. But as the report rightly notes, don't expect that level of automation via RFID anytime soon. Our recent post examining the current state of RFID clearly showed that it's years away. Oh, it's years away. So we mentioned the unique identifier. Tie that to an RFID chip. So then maybe your status on Facebook will come up that you just bought a bottle of wine at Whole Foods or God knows what. The last bit on cyberspacewar.com. Moon rock in Dutch museum is just petrified wood. This from the Associated Press, Dateline Amsterdam. It's not green cheese, but it might as well be. The Dutch National Museum said Thursday that one of its prized possessions, a rock supposedly brought back from the moon by U.S. astronauts, is just a piece of petrified wood. Rijksmuseum spokeswoman Zandra van Gelder, who oversaw the investigation that proved the piece was a fake, said the museum will keep it anyway as a curiosity. It's a good story with some questions that are still unanswered. Unanswered indeed, my friend. So again, let me remind you, cyberspacewar.com, another blast under the media monarchy kingdom. And the other one that we're going to hit right now, foodworldorder.com. We're covering the cyberspace war hype, and we're covering what is going on with what we put in our bodies. And I'll always be the first to admit, I'm no picture of perfect health by any means, but I'm trying to learn. By way of the Huffington Post, EPA fails to inform public about weed killer in drinking water. One of the nation's most widely used herbicides has been found to exceed federal safety limits in drinking water in four states, but water customers haven't been told, and the Environmental Protection Agency hasn't published any results. Records that tracked the amount of the weed killer known as atrazine, A-T-R-A-Z-I-N-E, atrazine, in about 150 watersheds from 2003 through 2008 were obtained by the Huffington Post Investigative Fund under the Freedom of Information Act. An analysis found that yearly average levels of atrazine in drinking water violated the federal standard at least 10 times in communities in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Kansas, all states where farmers rely heavily on the herbicide. In addition, more than 40 water systems in those states showed spikes in atrazine levels that normally would have triggered automatic notification of customers. In none of those cases were residents alerted. In interviews, EPA officials did not dispute the data, but said they don't consider atrazine a health hazard and said they didn't believe the agency or state authorities had failed to properly inform the public. Quote, "We have concluded that atrazine does not cause adverse effects to humans or the environment," end quote, said Steve Bradbury, Deputy Office Director of the EPA's Office of Pesticide Programs. So, the video report linked up to all this, and good work from Huffington Post Investigative Fund. How safe is atrazine?
The water that's being polluted by atrazine, it is being drank by you and your neighbors. Atrazine is a commonly used herbicide on corn. It is used to kill weeds.
As a former hydrologist for the state's Department of Agriculture, Paul Watzker regularly tested drinking water for harmful chemicals. He always found high levels of atrazine.
It is cheap. and it works. Atrazine is also the most commonly detected pesticide in groundwater and surface water.
American farmers have been using atrazine for 50 years. It is the second most widely used pesticide in the U.S., topping the charts at 80 million pounds a year. The corn and ethanol industries depend on it. But atrazine has been studied for its potential risks. In 2002, a Berkeley endocrinologist raised questions about atrazine's effect on animals.
What it does to animals, to vertebrate animals, is it causes a hormone imbalance.
Frogs exposed to atrazine were turning into hermaphrodites.
The concern in humans is that a decline in testosterone can lead to prostate cancer, breast cancer in women who live in areas where their water is contaminated, and fertility problems, low fertility.
Hayes had never heard of atrazine until the company that makes it asked him in 1997 to study its health risks. The company's name is Syngenta. It is the largest chemical company in the world, and it's based in Switzerland, where atrazine is banned. In fact, the entire European Union has banned atrazine because officials were worried that it might pose a potential health risk. According to Hayes, Syngenta pressured him to suppress his data, but he published his work anyhow. Syngenta responded, saying that Hayes' studies could not be reproduced. Syngenta declined to be interviewed for this story, but maintained that atrazine is safe. However, the former chief lobbyist for the makers of atrazine told us that even in the 1990s, the company was well aware of atrazine's potential to cause cancer and birth defects.
Now, the company they mentioned is called Syngenta, S-Y-N-G-E-N-T-A, Syngenta. EPA fails to inform public about weed killer atrazine in your drinking water. And it goes on. Again from Food World Order, this time by way of Eco Child's Play. Sig bottles had BPA all along. Sig bottles, S-I-G-G, if you don't know, Sig bottles, long upheld as the standard by which all non-plastic drink bottles should be compared, favorite of hippies and eco-gurus, juggernaut and arguably the biggest player in the metal bottle industry, has finally fessed up. Their quote-unquote water-based epoxy liner, long rumored but never confirmed to contain BPA, bisphenol A, indeed had BPA all along. Sig kept this cozy little secret by constantly releasing reassuring statements that their proprietary formula had been extensively tested and was never found to leach BPA. The subtle truth hidden in their messages was that they never said there was no BPA in there to begin with. But now, one entire year after changing their liner to a new EcoCare BPA-free formula, they're now admitting what so many have suspected all along. Did they lie to us? Not precisely. Did they deliberately deceive us? I say most certainly so. How many thousands of consumers bought Sig bottles specifically in response to the BPA scare? How many would have bought them if we'd been told, yes, our bottles have BPA, but it doesn't leach? There's no doubt in my mind that Sig was working entirely on a model of protecting their own bottom line, not protecting our health or public confidence. The fact that there's never been any test that showed BPA leaching from Sig bottles means that those of us who have used them extensively, even with their children, this writer was, as they say, an early adopter of metal bottles and favored Sigs over other brands almost exclusively, they're saying you don't have to panic that you've had any dangerous exposures, and that's important to hit. But we're left with shattered faith in a company we thought we could trust, that we could look up to as a beacon of eco-friendly and healthy product designs in a marketplace infested with dangerous, toxic, profit-driven crap. Once again, in our attempts to live eco-friendly lives, it seems we can't win and are betrayed by corporate interests. All aluminum bottles must have some sort of protective lining, and non-Sig cheaper knockoffs have been shown to leach BPA. Perhaps the best solution is to stick to non-aluminum, stainless steel options such as Clean Canteen, which are, of course, made in China. Sig bottles had BPA all along. The last posting on Food World Order. It's the 827 Binge and Purge, suing Bayer, UN plans, and boycotting Big Beer. First, from the Associated Press, farmers are suing the German-based Bayer Crop Science over their GM rice. Nearly 1,500 rice farmers are suing the German conglomerate Bayer Crop Science and their affiliated companies over a genetically engineered strain of rice. The lawsuit, filed Tuesday in federal court in Little Rock, claims the farmers' crops were corrupted by the rice that was produced by Bayer. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced in August 2006 that traces of an unapproved genetically engineered rice had been found in U.S. supplies of long grain rice. This lawsuit says that Bayer and Riceland Foods Incorporated confirmed the traces in early 2006 but didn't tell farmers, the government, or the public until July or August. A dollar amount being sought in damages is not given in the complaint. A spokesman for Bayer said he had not seen the lawsuit and couldn't comment. Again, thanks, Bayer. I can't even remember off the top of my head all their greatest hits. But I believe Zyklon B for the Nazis may have been just some of it. We also note that it is the just about 1 year anniversary of a Bayer pesticide factory explosion in West Virginia. It was a Bayer Crop Science plant. So we do have an update from 58WCHS.com. Vigil to mark the anniversary of this Bayer Crop Science explosion. This Friday, today, will mark 1 year since the explosion at the Bayer Crop Science plant, an institute that led to the death of two workers. On August 28th, the one-year anniversary of that explosion will be marked with a vigil at West Virginia State University Student Union. Those with the group People Concerned About MIC, methyl isocyanate, they organize the event. It's going to include a candlelight walk. Bayer Crop Science Explosions. A quick mention and a quick reference to farmwars.info, great site. United Nations plans to emerge as the controlling government. This is a long piece and goes through basically all the bill names and the subheadings and all of the things that get hidden in the bureaucracies. Our last bit, by way of counterpunch.org, and written by Benjamin Dangle, boycotting Big Beer. When Obama sat down for a beer in the White House Rose Garden with Professor Gates and Sergeant Crowley, they all turned their backs on the smaller craft brewers of the country. Obama chose Bud Light. Gates asked for a Red Stripe, and Crowley drank Blue Moon. One of the major craft brewers based where the writer Benjamin Dangle lives in Vermont is Magic Hat, a brewery with a delicious array of brews. That brewery issued a press release following the beer summit explaining, quote, "Craft brewers the country over are chagrined by the president's choice to consume a beer owned by a company based outside of America's borders. Bud Light, now owned by Belgium-based AB InBev, and Blue Moon, owned by London-based SAB Miller Coors, together control 94% of the beer market in the United States. However, the United States boasts over 1,500 craft brewers, the majority being made up of small Main Street businesses that employ less than 50 people." End quote. From that press release from Magic Hat, linked for you, magichat.net. This encounter at the Rose Garden provides a perfect time to reflect on why we should all boycott the beer monopolies of the world. One reason to boycott large breweries is the union-busting, right-wing culture that dominates some of the biggest breweries in America. Yuengling, I believe based out of Maryland, America's oldest brewery, and Coors, America's biggest brewery. The story of both of these companies offer insights into the ugly political and labor practices of this multi-billion dollar industry. Linked up. Must have drank something bad. Linked up from Alternet. and only going back to June of this year, union busting ended my love affair with a beer. This ties in with Yingling and their union busting. The other article linked up from BAMN.com, a self-described coalition to defend affirmative action, integration, and immigration rights and fight for equality by any means necessary. BAMN. Boycott Coors. They've got a whole rundown, information organizing, Boycott Coors, including Killian's, Keystone, Zima, Blue Moon, Extra Gold, and all that. Again, human rights abuses. So you notice a theme running through the postings on foodworldorder.com. We've got atrazine in our drinking water. We've got BPA in our Sig bottles. And the people we're supposed to look up to, or the people we've voted for change, or God knows what else, they all get together and they drink the corporate beer. Beer that masquerades as being all-American, but of course is owned by foreign corporations, because the whole plan is to just sink the whole economy and stop production and ship it all overseas and crash us down to third world status. It feels like somebody put something in my drink.
Somebody put something in my drink. Somebody.
How would you explain it? Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight. Yo.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.